what the viruses actually did, it accelerated killing off the guys who were actually in a vulnerable state, right? So your Edgars's. But majority of the corporates that are currently in South Africa have adapted well, right? So, you put smart people in a room for a couple of months, they're bound to come up with a solution to a problem, right?
Welcome to the Mass Startup Podcast. My name is Michelle Muda. This is a podcast for Africa's opportunity seekers, problem solvers, future shapers, world builders, and entrepreneurs. This podcast is meant to be a platform to encourage, empower, and educate young people in Africa on entrepreneurship, startups, and business. Welcome to the Mass Startup Podcast. So we've been trying to churn out a lot more content, a lot more frequently, and also a lot more consistently. And very key to that last one, consistently, is trying to also bring back some guests on a more consistent basis, a more frequent basis. So this week I got Ubobele and Dali back in the virtual studio. How are you guys doing?
All good.
I'm good, Mash. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing, Dali? Ubobele, for some reason, is making funny faces at the camera for some reason.
Because I can't hear Dali. No. I can't hear Dali.
No. It's all chilled. It's all chilled on this side. I think just surviving another week of lockdown. Organ level 3. So we'll see if possibly we go back to level 5.
Yeah. So, I mean, last time there wasn't really a set basis on which the podcast was made, and I don't think today is going to be the same. So I've been thinking about this lockdown 3 thing, and I'm going, as much as I understand why we'd need to go back, because there's probably going to be an insane shot in terms of numbers shooting up because of this, the behavior I've seen in the last week or so. You sort of just feel like life is back to normal. At some point, everyone was talking about how the new normal was going to be this drastic change in how we live our lives. And then level 3 was announced and it looked like, oh, life is normal. Nothing changed.
I mean, like, people are comfortable, right? So most people went back to work. People started hosting parties at home. Well, kids mainly, but even adults, celebrities started hosting parties at home. I think the main thing that is causing this behavior is alcohol, right? That's the big thing that is causing this behavior. People are more risk taking in this current environment. You know, they just.
But there's no curfew. There are no like restrictions. So I think that there are quite a few things that have actually come into play. So if we even consider like right now, the whole situation where we're talking about people hosting parties and stuff like that, is that, yeah. What were we expecting? 60 days and people would all of a sudden change their habits after like living on Earth for like 20 plus years. I'm just throwing adult years, but some people have been around for like even like 50 plus years. And we're expecting 60 days to just like change all that behavior.
Yes, Dali. That's exactly what I expected because, you know, I've quit a certain habit that I'd much rather not mention on the podcast, but I've quit a certain habit, right? Because I didn't have access to that thing, right? So I now know that, oh, I actually am fine now. But like, there's a behavioral change, right? There's a habit change. I don't know if it's habitual, but whatever. But if I can shift something that I felt was a habit, an addiction, whatever it is, and that can be removed because of the lockdown, how different is that from a party, from social gatherings, from being irresponsible in that way? I actually believe that the 60 days would do something to consumer behavior, to people's just general way of operating, right? I felt like there would be a massive change. But the way it looks, everything is just going to go back to exactly the way it is. And I think about the timelines that people had. Okay, restaurants will be open in 9 months. Parties and sort of festivals will be open in, say, 2 years or 3 years. You can bring those all the way down. If you look at the way people are behaving with just level three, all of that is like null and void. Normal is never going to be anything other than normal. There is no new version of it.
Yeah. Like, think about it. Like,
yeah.
The happiest people in this environment is people who own restaurants and nightclubs, right? Because they know that people, as soon as they get the green light, all they need to do is survive until they get to a point where everything everything is able to be open again. But speaking to whatever vices that you have, I'm sure there's a dark market that has been running throughout lockdown for your vices.
Well, I choose not to engage in the dark market, as you called it. I think that's also something to talk about. It's just like how much of that has actually existed now. Have you guys seen that black market / dark market really boom in terms of things that are available to people that could, that they can't necessarily buy because of whatever laws are in place?
Well, I wouldn't want to incriminate myself, so I'll plead the fifth. I don't know about Dali.
Okay, so on my side, I just talk of supply and demand. It's like even when people were complaining about PPE being like so overblown in price, it's supply and demand. You've got the supply, nobody else has the supply. Of course the price is going to go up. But if there's competition, the price will go down. But like with anything, it's also the long term. You can screw your customers over for the short term, but you best hope that you don't see their face again in the future. So those are the sort of gains that we have to just try and talk of, where I think unless you're like a con man, you're going to be in a city and then the next time you're not there, never going to see these people's faces. But in the day of the internet, yeah, I wish you all the luck.
Do you think there's going to be a lot more of it with possible level five coming back? You've seen a lot of businesses start to open up now, a lot of people being able to trade a lot more now. But how do you see things going forward? Whether we go full steam ahead with level three, which is basically a massive experiment on herd immunity at this point, versus going back into lockdown. How do you think this changes the way people think or operate?
Well, I think lockdown, like what was previously stated, it's not really a plan. As in, that's for when you don't have a plan. As in, you have to think about it. If there was an actual plan, we would have been like Taiwan or South Korea. Track and test and trace everybody, and we would have still been operating. But if you don't know where people are, as in, I'm just throwing statistics. I went for one of those COVID-19 tests where they jammed the thing up your nose. With Discam, it seems like they're using Lancet. They say it takes 3 to 5 days, but I'm hearing that results come out in like a day later, and that costs $850. Then you've got like the free government option, and they're saying 5 to 14 days. So the difference between 3 to 5 days and 5 to 14 days, hey, if I'm going to wait 14 days for my results and I actually come out positive, imagine the amount of people that I've already interacted with. Unless we're hoping that people are all honest and have a whole lot of integrity and they're going to self-isolate for those 2 weeks. But I highly doubt that's the case, especially if people want to go out and buy groceries. They don't want to face the issues of Zulzi and the likes. So, yeah.
Ubele, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with Dali, right? So there's a lag in the actual results of the test, right? So, you know, we possibly live 4 days back. Results that are going to come out tomorrow are possibly results from testing on Saturday. You know, the results that are going to come out on Thursday or possibly results from Monday, right? So there's an element of lag in what the actual figures are and what they could be. You know, when you look, like I remember you, when at the beginning of the lockdown, you said that the government is a possible loser in this whole scenario, right? And now I'm starting to agree, because Throughout the lockdown, the government was only able to add something like 250 more intensive care beds, a couple of more of ventilators. Not much to actually extend or to put us in a position where we are comfortable to say, hey, man, we can have more than 10,000 people in ICU, or we're able to, you know, mitigate the potential hurricane that is about to fall on us, right? I don't think we are at a position where we are comfortable enough to say that, you know, has the lockdown worked effectively enough? We don't know, right? I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not, you know, I'm not a doctor. I can't speak on, you know, the actual nature of the disease or the virus. But, you know, when you're looking at the government's implementation of the lockdown and what the courts have said or the High Court has said about the effectiveness of the decisions of the government, you can put blame to say, hey man, what have you guys been doing in this position or in this period of lockdown that has put us in a position where we are able to, you know, mitigate the further damage that we have on us. Like, I think currently everybody is doing whatever they want, right? And that's going to hurt us down the line, right? Whether you agree with it or not, right? It is going to hurt us down the line. And, you know, we haven't seen the end of the virus. We can move to level 2. We can move to level 5. But what is that going to actually do to us? How is that going to change the current situation that we have right now? All we can do is, hey, man, accept that, you know, we might not have done enough to move forward, and just try to mitigate the impact by, you know, the impact on the economy as well as the impact on people's lives by protecting those that are highly vulnerable, like the old, the elderly, the people that have pre-existing conditions, right? That's the only thing that we can do moving forward.
Yeah. Something that, like, has always underpinned my thinking around this virus and the impact of the lockdown has always been something that Scott Galloway said right at the beginning, where he said this virus was going to do to people what it's going to do to businesses. So it predominantly affects and hurts the old and the weak. And he said that in terms of people, which is, you know, has been obviously clear in terms of the data, where people that have sort of preconditions are often the ones that get hurt the most, or possibly it becomes fatal. And then also the old who have immune systems that might be compromised as well. But taking it back to businesses, have you seen the impact that it's actually had in terms of the old, which being, you know, corporates that are very, that operate on very traditional models and stuff like that, and well, as well as the weak, which is small businesses that might not have had the cash flow to actually survive this time?
Well, on the corporate side, right, what the virus has actually did, it accelerated killing off the guys who were actually in a vulnerable state, right? So your Edgars. But majority of the corporates that are currently in South Africa have adapted well, right? So, you know, you put smart people in a room for a couple of months, they're bound to come up with a solution to a problem, right? Even if you look at the financial markets, right, they're very divorced from what is happening in reality, because they price in the future rather than what is currently happening, right? So everything is on the financial market has already recovered, because they priced in the risk that is currently happening, and they believe that the companies that exist right now are able to thrive.
Dali?
Yeah, my take is that, just adling on to what Ububele has already touched on, is that, yeah, the big old companies, like banks are not going to die, as in they're literally a fundamental part of the economy. You look at any of the other businesses, I think it's only the ones where you had like razor sharp margins. We had a chat about it, which was the airlines and the restaurants. It's not to say that they're passion projects, but that's literally what I was just saying, that you have to have a whole lot of passion to stay in that industry, because literally, if it's not there, you're literally going to be on the chopping block, like with everybody else. I think the only ones who've been able to survive so far have been like the big franchises. So you think of like your Nando's, your Chicken Lickens, your McDonald's, your KFCs, your Pizza Huts, anybody who at least has a wider range, I think they would have been able to hold things out. But for the smaller restaurants and cafes, I think you guys were talking about Bloom, that was next to the Yoko offices. Wasn't that also going to close down?
Let Bloom go, bro. Just Daddy, it's a very hurtful thing to say. Right? But no, man. Like going back, I'm sure people don't want to hear us speak about COVID. Right? There's a few things that I actually wanted to speak about. I want you to speak about how you feel about the podcasting industry and how like your podcast is growing within the ranks, not just in South Africa, because it's measured in South Africa relative to the world, because majority of the podcast feed or the top 100 feed on the Apple Store consist of American American and other podcasts. The second thing I also wanted to speak about was Dali's tax bill. I don't know which one you want to you want to touch on first.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt. Also, just add the new Engage Podcast Network that also came out and your thoughts about it.
Oh, damn.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, damn.
What's wrong?
Oh, damn. Oh, damn.
So, I think it's a very interesting time. I think that a lot of people think that they know that. I think a lot of people think they know what they're getting themselves into, but they might not be fully conscious of what it means. So a lot of the sort of experiences I've had so far in terms of podcasting for the last 3 years has been that it's very easy to start your own, but it's very, very difficult to be able to, one, maintain that one podcast that you're making, but try and scaling a network as well. I think that we are so early in the game that we don't even realize it. I think a lot of people think that this is very cut and dry and very straightforward, but it isn't. And it's going to be a long game. I'm thinking 10 years before it genuinely reaches its full potential, mainly because of internet access and sort of just being able to drive people to a different medium. If you look at the numbers for South African YouTube versus podcast, you will see just the reality, right? So it's much easier to get 1,000 people to watch a YouTube video than it is to get 1,000 people to listen to a podcast. And that means a much deeper investment in trying to build a community, and much deeper investment in creating valuable content, much deeper relationship with the work that you're actually doing. I think there's this thing that South Africans do really well, which is finding trends and then ruining them as well. I think we're really good at like just all 150 million of us going into something. And then there's so much noise that the good stuff actually doesn't rise to the top, and it actually stifles or even strangles a really potential amazing thing, right? So with podcasts, I'm seeing a lot of noise, which is, it was fundamentally good in the beginning because it drove adoption, but now that noise is becoming the blocker that's stopping people to go into the actual crux and value part of the industry. Because if people are getting stuck with the noise, if you go through 5 podcasts, the first time you try and listen to a South African podcast, if you go through 5 podcasts and you hate all of them, you probably won't ever touch podcasts again, because you're going to decide that this medium is not great. And that's the thing that's happening now, is there's a lot of noise that is now becoming a blocker and not the thing that was driving adoption. So early on, I really always thought, you know, if we created a guide for people to listen to podcasts, we created a podcast library, what we would be doing is driving adoption of the medium at a really mass scale by, you know, trying to double or triple the amount of creators in the space. But now I've actually changed my perspective on that. And it's like, now it's actually becoming noise rather than adoption, driving adoption. It's actually just compounding the noise, which really hurts us. But on the whole, I think it's a 10-year game, very built very consciously, very intentionally. I think we've just rebuilt our entire model now, and it starts with having, you know, much, much more focus on community and content, but also being very conscious of how to commercialize that. And it's an interesting thing that we're going through, and I think it will be interesting 5 to 10 years, but I'm not even like worried about what's happening right now, because people are making assumptions that are very dangerous into how profitable this can be and how quickly you'll be able to scale anything in this space.
I'm definitely making an assumption, right? So so I think, personally, I think that, I think I tweeted about this thing in the morning where I think Cliff Central had the right idea but the wrong model, right? So in South Africa, currently, the infrastructure for hosting a podcast doesn't exist besides Iono. But Iono was built for radio snippets, right? That's why I think that's why you have 702 who host their platform or their podcast on, I think it's Castbox or one of the other guys in the UK, right? So the problem is that, you know, even if you know, the hosting infrastructure, the way that podcasts are like, the only revenue model for podcasts in South Africa is having a branded one. Not even having ad bits. It's having a branded podcast with a Discovery or another one of these insurance guys who are heavily into this field. So I think the model itself is flawed, right? So for it to work, you need to show people that are invested into it an avenue for them to be successful. If I start a YouTube channel, my avenue to be successful is, YouTube guys, they like things being sent to them, like brand sponsorships, right? Like the influencer model, right? If you start a YouTube channel, the main thing that you're trying to do is you're trying to get brands aligned with your community and whatever you're building, right? That's essentially the only monetizable way, unless you get big enough to be your MKHBD, your Lex Luthor. Is it Lex Luthor, that guy? Dali is his name, Lex Luthor. It's not Lex Luthor.
Which one?
The unbox therapy guy, right?
And also like quite a lot of the other guys within the space, quite a lot of them, as in, they get paid for the ad sponsors that they put within their videos, because I think MKBHD has done NordVPN and he's also done ExpressVPN, so of course guys are paying for the spots that he puts in his videos,
like having those you know, those brand placements, right? In South Africa, currently the model is having a brand sponsorship where you guys, you know, talk about whatever stupid product the brand gives you, and you get whatever check that you get, and you hope that the next one will come to you, right? Currently, that's the only advertising model, and it's because that the only platform that actually works is YouTube, Instagram, but Iono is the only one that has been investing in the tools to actually have you know, podcasters own the RSS feed, right? Like, the most important thing is that having a podcast is so important, because the distribution channels are infinite, right? You have your Spotify, you have your Google Podcasts, you have your Apple Podcasts, right? It's not like if I have a YouTube channel, the only thing that I can do with that video is post on YouTube. I can't take snippets of it and post it on TikTok. I have to create a whole new avenue or a whole new a thing for me to be popular on TikTok, right? Whilst having an RSS feed, having your voice, having something like the impact that you can have with the podcast, you can literally take it and distribute it infinite ways, right? You can even convert your videos into audio and distribute it via podcast. But you need to show people the way to be successful via an effective monetization route, right? So you need to show, how can I be successful and still make money at the exact same time?
Ububele, you're raising some very important questions and like some very valuable ones as well. So I think there's a lot more models to the podcasting thing that a lot of people are not conscious of, whether it's from a platform perspective, hosting perspective, content perspective, distribution perspective, and then advertising perspective. Like, there's so much more to this than I think people are conscious of. I think people are just seeing the sort of last mile of it, which is like, let's make content look cool and put it out. I think people are not investing in communities enough. People aren't investing in platform enough. But I think, again, this is one of those things where it's going to show who really wanted to do this and who thought it was a really cool trend. And it always shows long term. And I think this is something that's around. It's going to be around for a very long time. And I'm looking forward to what the future looks like. Some of that future I hope to actually create myself. So it's going to be an interesting time. I think the more platforms we have, the more distribution channels we have, and the more invested people actually get to supporting the actual medium and trying to help creators reach the audiences that they need and drive community, those people are going to win. Everyone else, I'm not so sure. So what's this about Dali's tax bill? What the hell is going on there?
We have a gigantic tax bill on our hand. Dali.
So, yeah.
Dali, what's happening?
I can break it down. No, but things okay, so as you guys know, I'm plugging my company in there, African Technopreneurs, 180x2.co.za, selling 360 cameras. That's the reason why I'm actually having to pay this tax bill. So for anybody who wants to get into the space, I'm hoping that this also just gives you a bit of encouragement, knowing that someone who's also based in South Africa can turn over so much that you now have to pay 400,000 to SARS. Of course, you're collecting it on their behalf, but you have to realize that that is 15% of the total amount. Anybody who knows mathematics, I'm not going to show you or actually tell you how to do the mathematics in this episode, but if you can just do an inverse calculation, you can figure out as to how much that is. It is still quite small, but
that's what that's.
It's just the reality of the way
that
things go.
That's a month's worth of sales, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much like around two months, right? Or so. So we'll have to see how things play out. But just to give perspective, is that I think it would be something that we can even touch right now, probably with the Compass Africa side of things, is that this touches on the basis that whenever you're actually importing anything, there's going to be duties and there's going to be taxes, or actually VAT, on whatever you're actually paying. And like right now, the 400 is actually being paid to DHL, which collects it on our behalf. But the nice thing is that we do have a 7-day account with them. So for anybody who also wants to get into that same sort of ordeal, most of the couriers also act as forwarders, where they actually deal with your customs and all your duty requirements. So the mere fact is that at least you can get the stock in. If you can turn it over in 7 days, at least you don't have to worry that you have to pay that 400,000 or whatever upfront to begin with. But that's just a talk. I think just to touch on my side, at least my inventory is actually in the country. Let's just talk about what has been happening with ProStarter and trying to get things from China.
So that would also require us to go into the model, right, of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So Ububele, please break down first, what is Compass? Then secondly, what is ProStarter? And then thirdly, why I don't like reading your emails anymore.
So Compass has been around since what? May 2018, but officially November 2019. It's essentially a holding company for an e-commerce lab that we run, right? One of our brands within the lab is called ProStarter. And then, you know, yeah, so essentially what ProStarter is, it's tools for creators to create video and audio. Currently, we were selling is a rig, right? It's a rig with a mount, with a stand, with a microphone, right? But the thing that happened was that when we opened the store, I think mid-May, right? We opened the store and we got sales, but our cash was tied up in something else. But we needed to send money to our supplier in China. What happened there was that there was a problem with an FX transaction where we mistakenly put the wrong beneficiary name onto the loading our FX. So when the money reached China, it bounced because they couldn't verify the account name, right? So we needed to do a re-effect of an FX transaction, meaning that you need to give authorization to the bank and the FX the FX department to say, hey guys, we made a mistake, we need to send this money to this particular account. But now, you know, what happens is that money stays in a suspensory account until somebody authorizes. So we need to write a letter to the bank to say, hey guys, please tell the guys in China to authorize this transaction into this particular account. And that has been taking a lot of days. So what has happened now, effectively at the end, is that our money hasn't cleared in China. And then we don't, you know, the stock that we have is still in China and hasn't been loaded onto a plane to South Africa. So now we need to refund everybody that actually had to, you know, place an order. You know, luckily enough, we have money in our account to actually do that.
Dali, what are the lessons here?
Okay, so the lessons is that unless you can Elon Musk it, make sure that you've actually got stock on hand. So you might be wondering what I mean by Elon Musk is that you sell people hopes and dreams as to them getting their car in like the next year, but you know, it's like a Kickstarter project. These things never actually arrive on time. I've recently backed like an augmented reality Kickstarter, supposed to get delivery in February. Which month are we in right now? It's June. I'm still waiting. So those are the things that you actually have to face when it comes to buying from a new company or even a new brand. And it comes about wanting to balance people's expectations. Second thing is that I think, like with anything else, is that I'm hoping for the next podcast that we now say, yay, we have actually gotten the cash back from the supplier, or actually we've actually gotten the product. That'll be a better line to use. But business is all about risk. And I think anybody who thinks that business is all straightforward, I just send money, and now when I get the product, I can sell it to the customer, is deluding themselves. If business was easy, everybody would be in it. I think that's the old saying as it goes. And then I think lastly, is this a case of, hey, maybe we should have actually measured things a bit better. Of course, we are facing a crisis, so things might be a bit slower when it comes to transactions and the way that things actually operate. But yeah, those are the lessons that I actually just want to throw out there. And I think it's not really a lesson, but I think you might have heard the one thing that we did is that we communicated with our customers to check if they still wanted the product. If they don't want the product and they want their money back, you never necessarily want to hold on to a customer's money, because they will necessarily tell everybody as to how you actually conned them. And that actually adds to your bad reputation. So I think like with anything else is that sometimes your buyers, as in, I'm just going to put it out there, I was also one of the people who bought a product from our own store, because of course you have to support your own business. But the mere fact is that at least I didn't ask for a refund, as in I just wanted to make sure that, hey, at least I can see this product come through, see that it actually works.
You're testing the transaction.
And of course, you have to dog food it.
You're testing the payment.
Testing the transaction, but...
Yeah.
Exactly. But the thing is that you have to go out there when the product comes through, you're talking to a whole lot of people, you can pitch to them and make sure that, hey, they might actually be keen on actually wanting to buy your product. Yeah. Because the last thing you want is that, for example, I think all of us are using iPhones. I see Ubu Bella is using an iPhone 11. Mash is using the latest iPhone SE.
He actually bought an iPhone 11.
10S.
He actually bought it.
You don't know that.
Yeah, you see. So you can see. The mere fact is that if, for example, we're now trying to pitch to you guys that, hey, buy the latest Huawei P40, you're not going to believe us because we don't use the phone. And like, for example, I think even with the microphone gear is that once it comes through, that's one thing that we're going to be dedicated towards doing. Using the gear so at least you know that the quality that you're going to be receiving is the same quality that we're recording on.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. I need to jump off to go onto an Instagram live. Would either of you would like to join me on this?
Send the link in the WhatsApp.
Just go away. Like, the internet doesn't have cool, my guys. Face, bro. Like, you want... you want people to know how I actually look like. All right.
Thank you guys so much. Really good. Well, at least this one wasn't at midnight. So thank you guys so much. Let's do this more often. I think it's valuable. So we share our process in terms of how we started our business, the things that we're trying to do and how they work, mainly because it helps, right? So this week, if you listen to this podcast, this is just for you. We won't announce this on Twitter or anywhere else. We've now built a guide to e-commerce, which is literally a guide to how to build an e-commerce store from start to finish. Dali, as you heard, is making a very significant amount of money on an e-commerce platform. And we're a startup lab for e-commerce platforms. We've built a bunch of stores for other people. We've helped a bunch of people get really good sales. But we want to help a lot more people and do it for absolutely nothing. But the sheer value of empowering people. So go to compass.africa and then go onto our guide. And you'll click onto the guide to e-commerce. It's right at the top. And it will break down each and every step that you need to take to actually build an online store. I think it's super, super valuable. And if you go through that, you really learn a lot. So it's very much worth it. Take your time with it. Learn as much as possible and also feedback to us. I think it's really great when we hear more about your experience and whether or not it was valuable or not. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you guys so much for being part of this as well.
All right. Cheers, Mash. No problem.
Cool. Just a quick wrap up. Just a quick one. So, again, connecting, where can you find us? So, for myself, DJ Ngoma on Twitter and the likes. I do currently now have a Calendly link on my Twitter profile. So, if you get stuck with e-commerce or augmented and virtual reality, literally, you can book 15 minutes and I'll be able to assist you. So, we've got a guide, like Mash has already alluded to. And if you do need help, at least I can spare 15 minutes to at least get you in the right direction. But put in the work and you also be able to succeed as we're trying to as well.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
Me out. You can cut the recording.
I'll charge you. If you want my advice, I'll charge you.
Include this in the recording. Yeah. Anyway, so what? Cool. So.